My name is Tim Kieschnick. I'm a cook up here at Holden Village for the last year and a half about. I'm also a war tax resister. This is a session on war tax resistance. And just by way of introducing myself, very briefly, I'd like to begin by reading a letter that I sent this past April 15th to the Internal Revenue Service on behalf of myself and Karen. Dear neighbors at the IRS, this year we again write to explain why we enclose no payment with our Form 1040A. We do not disagree with taxation, and we certainly bear no ill feelings toward you. Our consciences simply will not permit us to contribute willingly to the huge military machine of our country. Rather than sending our taxes to you, we will send them to a charitable organization. The United States military threatens the lives of our neighbors all over the world. It symbolizes and embodies a totally inappropriate way for groups of people to interact, and it does so at the expense of severely needed social programs. Paying our federal income tax would fund the United States military directly, as over half of our money would pay for past, present, and future wars. We cannot so blatantly act contrary to our morals. Thus, this year we will again redirect our taxes to an organization that will use the money to help people and affirm life. I've been a war tax resister for the last 5-6 years. I've been participated in a number of war tax resistance organizations, and I've been trained in counseling other people in figuring out what might be the best way for them to deal with these issues, and I've led several training seminars on it. And what I have tonight is what I think is an excellent resource put out by the National War Tax Resistance Coordinating Committee, a slideshow that gives a good, quick, but fairly comprehensive overview of what it is that we're talking about when we say war tax resistance. It's about a 20-minute slideshow, and then after that, we'll have some open discussion and questions, and I've never failed to get a discussion going after the slideshow, of one sort or another. It's going to be shown here, so we may need to do a little bit of rearranging. I think we have the tape recorder set where everyone can hear it, but if you can't hear it, can't understand the words, be sure to just give a yell in the middle of it rather than sit through without hearing it.
Share something in common. We all need to earn a living wage, but an average of 1/4 of the money we earn doesn't come home to our families. Instead, it pays federal taxes, and much of that money goes into an enormous military budget. Some of us are asking, is this what we want as the fruits of our labor? My name is Steve Harms. I'm a Lutheran minister, and my wife, Bev, is a nurse. For 7 years now, we've refused to pay our federal taxes. This slideshow will profile a number of people who, like Bev and I, are actively protesting their federal tax payment. We're not objecting to taxation. What we do object to is the way our tax money is being used.
In Philadelphia, two people from the IRS came to see us. And I said to them, I said, suppose I show SOBs down there. I don't like it. Ought to be dismissed from the world. And I have a goal to do this. Will you please contribute so I can buy guns? And then I said, you were doing the same thing. You asking me to give money to kill a bunch of people whom I don't know, and whom if I did know, I certainly would contribute to their death. And I said, get it. No. The answer is no, forever for no.
Before we see more about why people resist and how they're redirecting their money, let's take a look at our federal tax dollars. Our income tax dollars supply about two-thirds of the money the government spends. The rest of the money comes from excise taxes, such as liquor, gas, and cigarette taxes, and from corporation taxes. This section of the federal budget pie represents military spending. The section highlighted is spent on nuclear warheads and their delivery systems. Submarines, missiles, and airplanes. This piece of the pie is spent on past military spending, including war-related debts. The rest of the money is divided among human resources, physical resources, and general government costs. This unprecedented military spending is the motivation for thousands of people refusing to cooperate with this tax system. Some people resist as part of their work for a nuclear weapons freeze, or in their work against U.S. military intervention in Central America. There's a growing number of feminist war tax resistors, and some religious people are refusing to pray for peace and pay for war. This is a very personal and complex issue. It makes us ask, do I obey my conscience or the laws of my country? Do I act on my fear of nuclear annihilation or my fear of the IRS? Now, I can't tell you what you should do, but for me, it's been important to hear other people's stories in order to learn what my own options are.
I've worked on and off for AFSC since 1948. From 48 to 53, I was head of the work in Germany. Being in Germany is a profound experience in understanding that we all are complicit in the guilt of our country. And I see my country doing evil, wrong things. And whereas you may not want to compare it with Hitlerism, it's of the same ilk. But I think it's just as wrong what we're doing in El Salvador and Honduras and Nicaragua.
I'm a public servant. And ostensibly, I am an example of the good things that your taxes can do. And when I feed that income back into the system, hopefully I like to see the same type of thing being done with it.
In 1982, Peter and his wife, Faith, an attorney, refused to pay their war taxes.
But this is something that we could do as a direct reaction to our government spending $1.6 trillion in a period of 5 years for nothing more than this military establishment, which of course is horribly inefficient. You know, the horror stories about paying $80 for a screw for replacement parts.
The government in its high-tech format right now for nuclear and first strike weaponry needs a lot more money than it ever has before to keep all that going. And our taxes being withheld from our paychecks every day is the way that they get that money. I will not pay for war or death or nuclear annihilation. I just won't do it. I might die that way, but it won't be by my own hand.
Ever since the settling of the colonies, there have been Americans refusing to pay taxes for conscientious reasons. The Boston Tea Party is a famous instance. The Tea Partiers objected to the British government's taxation without representation. War tax resistors specifically object to paying for war and war preparation. Since the American Revolution, some U.S. citizens, especially members of the historic peace churches, have refused to pay these taxes. And people outside the church have resisted as well. Because of his refusal to pay poll taxes, used to pay for the Mexican War and extend American slavery, Henry David Thoreau was jailed in 1848. In his famous essay, On the Duty of Civil Disobedience, Thoreau wrote, If 1,000 men were not to pay their tax bills this year, that would not be a violent and bloody measure, as it would to pay them and enable the state to commit violence and shed innocent blood. There were no income taxes in this country until 1862, when they were imposed to pay for the Civil War. Americans were outraged at the imposition of war taxes, which were lifted again in 1872. But the income taxes reappeared in 1913, just in time to pay for World War I. People were required to figure out what they owed and send it in to Washington. The system changed again in 1943, during the height of the Second World War. The employee withholding tax was instituted. For the first time, employers took taxes out of paychecks before workers were paid. The federal government now depended on income tax to cover its budget. During the Vietnam War, war tax resistance became an important and very visible way that people worked for withdrawal of American troops from Vietnam. By 1972, about 20,000 people had refused to pay some or all of their income taxes, and as many as 500,000 Americans refused to pay their telephone tax. That's the federal tax included on monthly phone bills that collects money for the military budget. The resistors included national figures like Joan Baez, Allen Ginsberg, Dorothy Day, Gloria Steinem, and Pete Seeger. Today, despite popular support for the nuclear freeze and widespread sentiment that the United States military should not be involved in Central America, our nation's policymakers continue to commit massive resources to war preparation. And war tax resistance is growing again. The IRS admits that the number of war tax resistors quadrupled. Between 1979 and 1982, the number continues to grow. One resistor is Catholic Archbishop Raymond Hunthausen of Seattle.
Whether or not the human family destroys itself through nuclear war is, I believe, the greatest spiritual crisis in history. Through faith, we are no longer captives of fear. Fear of the Russians, fear of the third world peoples, fear of losing our wealth, fear of giving up our Holocaust weapons. In June of last year, I was moved to express a vision of faith in which a sizable number of people in the state of Washington might refuse to pay 50% of their taxes in nonviolent resistance to nuclear war and suicide. I admitted then that by my own decision, I was not yet among those tax resistors in my vision. I have since joined them by deciding to refuse such a portion of my income taxes this April 15th.
There are lots of different ways to resist war taxes. We'll talk about a few here. But each person considering tax alternatives needs to explore their own options and perhaps consult with a counselor. There are hundreds of war tax counselors nationwide who are trained to assist people in choosing a course of action. First, there are legal ways to work against war taxes. Lots of people write a letter to the IRS and to members of Congress protesting the way war tax money is used. Some work for passage of the World Peace Tax Fund bill, which was introduced into Congress by Senator Mark Hatfield and Representative Ronald Dellums in 1972.
The World Peace Tax Fund Act would provide an opportunity for citizens of the United States who pay taxes to say to the federal government that that percentage of their taxes that goes to the military budget would go instead for peaceful developmental purposes.
As one way of increasing pressure on Congress to pass the bill, people signed a Conscience and Military Tax Campaign pledge. They promised to stop paying war taxes at the moment when 100,000 pledges have been signed. Others are already taking steps which the IRS holds to be illegal.
We very carefully figured out our taxes and deducted that portion of our taxes from all available data that we thought would go to the military and pay the rest. The idea was to just gum up the works.
employer is bound by law to withhold a certain proportion of your wages for income tax purposes. And all the W-4 form tells the employer is how much to withhold every week. And so I have done W-4 resistance, which is a way of claiming extra allowances so that I get the money every paycheck and not the government. I wrote on my 1040 that I was taking a military tax deduction, so it's clear. I pay Social Security, I pay state taxes, I pay everything that isn't federal money expenditure for my paycheck every week.
We do raise about 80% of our food, I'd say. We raise on about half an acre, enough for our own food and to sell for our income. In recent years, I would imagine that we don't have a taxable income.
I feel very pleased not to give the government 1 cent.
Some people resist by not sending any income information to the IRS at all. Many others are participating in a national campaign encouraging people to refuse payment of 10 tax dollars, a symbolic act of protest against increasing U.S. militarism. And thousands are refusing to pay their telephone tax. While it's only a small tax, appearing on our monthly phone bills, that tax brings in over $1 billion for the military each year. Now, what could happen when you take a step? While the non-payment of taxes is illegal, war tax resistance has been defended in court. Arguments have often been based on the United States Constitution, which guarantees freedom of expression, and on the International Nuremberg Principles, which were established after World War II. They assert that each citizen is responsible for the actions of his or her government. The particular legal consequences of any act of resistance may change from year to year, but let's look at some possible consequences.
I have sent the IRS a long letter and graphics and statistics and everything with my 1040 form the last 2 years. I haven't heard anything from them yet.
The Internal Revenue Service is an enormous collection agency. They have a long series of steps they can take in attempting to collect refused taxes. You might get a couple of letters or a visit or two, and that's all. Your books might be audited. They may attach your wages or simply take the money they want from your bank account without your permission. In a few cases, the IRS has seized cars and other property. Or you could receive a penalty charge for incorrect filing. For his objection to paying taxes for war, Peter Brewer was fined $500, the frivolous filing penalty.
It's quite humorous that they take a stand of conscience like this and call it frivolous. You know, you're worthless. That's silly. You know, nobody, you can't think like that. You have to pay $500 extra for that. It's not a frivolous sum. So we objected to having to pay this fine, and we have taken it to about our last level of appeal.
People very rarely go to jail because of their war tax resistance. Since World War II, only 15 to 20 resistors have been jailed, but not for refusal to pay their taxes. They've been jailed for charges like contempt of court or for refusing to produce records. The people involved made conscious decisions to push their resistance to that point.
I think this was in 1959. But on this particular day, I was home by myself, and there was a knock on the door, and when I got there, there were these two, obviously, officers of the law. They were arresting me for contempt of court. I had refused to obey a summons to show my records, financial records. So then they put me in the paddy wagon, took me downtown, put me in a cell, and just left me. The upshot of it was that I was released that day, saying that I would have to show my records in 7 days. So I had assumed that I would really be arrested, but nobody came. And nothing ever happened.
Again, the process of IRS collection can be very long and drawn out, sometimes going on for years. Resistors who decide they don't want to deal with the IRS can, at any point, simply pay up the money they owe and stop the collection process. That's what Dinah Bachrach, a nuclear freeze activist, did. But she found a way to both pay her taxes and to effectively protest them.
Beth found out through lawyers what the IRS would accept, and in fact, they will accept a check on virtually anything. I said, we've seen it all, we've had them on toilet seats. So I planned a protest, a symbolic demonstration of where I felt the tax monies were going by making my check in the form of a model of a Pershing 2 missile.
What do people do with their resisted tax dollars? Some people choose to put their resisted taxes into an escrow account. Then they can retrieve it if they decide to pay in the collection process. Others redirect their money.
At the end of the year, when it comes time for paying taxes, I figure out what the government is supposed to get. And then I take that money and I write checks for the whole amount of resisted taxes. This year it was $2,400. I wrote 24 checks for $100 apiece to 24 organizations, mostly local, who are doing what I consider socially responsible work towards creative change.
The first year I sent that portion of my taxes, which went to the military, to the World Peace Tax Fund. This year I chose to give my money outright to the bake sale project.
Organizers in Northern California are collecting $100,000 in resisted taxes, with which they'll open a daycare center. Some war tax resistors pool their money to begin alternative funds, which then give out the money in grants or loans. There are many of these funds already in existence across the country.
Our Pioneer Valley War Tax Resistance has an alternative fund. And we have some thousands of dollars that we have given.
We look for local groups in this town and in Amherst. They have what they call survival centers. So these are places where people can get food, they can get clothing or anything.
I guess I feel very much as though this is a thing that those of us who consider ourselves in the peace movement have got to grapple with. We have to synchronize our words and our actions.
War tax resistance can be said quite well, as Einstein has said here. Even if only 2% of those assigned to perform military service should announce their refusal to fight, governments would be powerless.
Now, I can't tell you what you should do, but I do hope that this slideshow moves you to think more about what we're buying with our tax dollars.
We bring more than a paycheck to our loved ones and families. We bring more than a paycheck to our loved ones and families. We bring more than a paycheck to our loved ones and families. We bring more than a paycheck to our loved ones and families. We bring more than a paycheck to our loved ones and families.
Well, there it is. I think that's an excellent overview of what it is we're talking about. Let me just open it up and see where we'd like to go with it. Any initial reactions? Yeah.
Are you worried about going to jail for being here?
Not for war tax resistance. I think they mentioned on it that in the last 50, 75 years, less than 20 people have actually gone to jail for war tax resistance. And those that have were not prosecuted for non-payment of taxes, but for things like failure to produce records, where they didn't, for instance, they did not file a 1040 form, and the IRS came and said, file a form, and they said no, and IRS said, well, then show us your records. And they said, we won't show you your records. And they said, well, then we'll take you to court for them. And they said, okay. And then they went limp and had to be dragged into court and then refused to say anything in court and then were found in contempt of court and then were sent to jail. There's situations similar to that.
So this is strictly war tax evader. It's not like a tax evader, somebody that just won't pay income tax because he feels that income tax is...
Right, I make a big distinction between myself as a war tax resister or redirector as opposed to a tax evader. There are a couple of key points in that. One of them is that I do it for reasons of conscience. Another is that I don't keep the money myself. I send the money to a charity of some form. I don't just keep the money to buy a sailboat for myself. And another is that I try to be open and honest about it. I write the IRS a letter and I say, according to my 1040 form, yes, I owe this amount of money, but I'm not willing to send that to you. So I try to be as open as I can about it. And I think those are important distinctions between what I do and what a tax evader does. Yes, either of you back.
As a person who's been in the armed service, all I can say about this stuff, I think of what President Reagan said recently when he addressed in a speech the graduates from a Marine training camp, mm-hmm. who had just completed their tour of duty. Anyone who wants to disarm this country or who does not wish to fight for this country, I have this opinion. Tell it to the Marines.
Okay.
I have recently done that same thing with the telephone company. It's mm-hmm. a very small step, but it's a statement. Mm-hmm. And so if someone hasn't done that and is interested in doing it, I would say it's not really a very painful thing to do. It's just one more statement you can make. We're so powerless to control or have any say-so over how our money is being spent. But that is one way that we can do it. I just wrote him a little note along with it and said that I wasn't, I've just been subtracting like $1.50 a month or something. Mm-hmm. And I got a telephone call right after I sent it from one of the gals in the business office saying, hi, thanks for your letter, and we'll pass on the information, and just be sure that you write a little note every month along with your bill so we know what's going on. Mm-hmm. That note asks you to ask them, tells them why you're doing it, that you're concerned about the nuclear buildup, and that you would encourage them to tell the IRS and also to tell the Congress, to your legislature, that you are pushing for a tax fund, a war tax fund, so that money can be. I think there's some kind of legislation.
Right, the World Peace Tax Fund bill that was mentioned in the show. Mm-hmm. That The telephone tax resistance, I think, does deserve a little more commentary. It's something that's an excellent first step for people who are at a point where they want to do some sort of war tax resistance and don't know quite how to get into it. The telephone tax, throughout its history, has been associated specifically with the military. It's each time when it was instituted and each time it has been increased, it has been specifically for military projects. When it was increased in, I think, 1967, it was specifically mentioned, we need this money in order to continue the bombing going on in Southeast Asia. Without this extra revenue, we won't be able to do that. And so let's pass the telephone tax increase.
And they won't turn off your telephone for it.
Right. This is something between the telephone service consumer and the IRS. And the telephone company is legally not allowed to interrupt your service for it. What you do need to do, as you mentioned, is to send in a note every month with the telephone, with your bill, and that's mainly to let them know that since you're not paying them the full amount on the bill, but the part that you're leaving out is the income tax part. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they'll just consider that you're not paying your phone bill, and they can cut off your service for not paying your phone bill, but they can't cut it off for not paying the federal income tax portion of it.
Does that build up each month then?
Different phone companies do it differently. I've moved around quite a bit, and sometimes they just keep adding it up, but that's it. And usually, usually they take it off. I even heard of one case where a person had been doing this regularly and one time forgot to subtracted and sent him the full amount, and they gave him back a refund. Yeah, back here, I think, and then we'll get to you.
Do you do this from a pacifist position as opposed to all war, or do you explain, is this selective? Or
pacifism is a tricky word. John Howard Yoder has an excellent booklet called Nevertheless, which describes, I think, 23 or 27 different forms of pacifism. So I'm a pacifist, but there are a lot of different kinds of pacifism. I'm opposed to almost all wars, and I am certainly opposed to the kinds of wars and the kind of military adventures that the United States is involved in now. I have no doubts that I'm opposed to these particular ones, and that's the situation in which I am, so that's the situation to which I respond. Yeah.
When you withhold your income tax, you withhold 80% of it, or you withhold 100% of it?
I've done that differently different years. That's kind of it's a real personal question, depending on reasons you're doing it. Some years I've withheld 64% or 63%, whatever it is, that particular year, the amount of money that is the portion of the income tax that actually goes to the military, which is currently around 64% if you include paying back debts for past wars and some things like that. And in the remaining 36% as a symbol that I'm not opposed to taxation, that I'm not opposed to supporting the federal government and paying for whatever, highways and social services and government officials and even some things that I don't agree with, but that I'm focusing on this one particular thing. On the other hand, most years I've sent in nothing to the IRS. I've redirected my entire amount to a different organization on the basis that even if I only send in 34%, still most of that money will end up going to the military. Other people differentiate in their, some people will withhold only a dollar as a token amount, just to say, okay, this is to make my point that I'm not doing this willingly. Other people will withhold the amount that goes to current military expenditures, but they say, I'm very supportive of veterans benefits, so I'll include that proportion in the proportion that I do pay, some things like that. Yeah.
Would I be correct in my assumption that the IRS is very practical minded in determining who they're going to go after? They go after folks who have assets that they can readily get their hands on. In other words, that, like, I don't know what you're making as a cook up here, but I imagine it's not real big buck. Probably wouldn't be able to extract a whole lot money.
I just got a letter saying that they were adding on huge penalties and interest of an additional 61 cents to put the fear of God in them.
Okay, well, somebody that makes a substantial income and has some assets and so forth, what's going to happen to them if they refuse to pay their 64% or whatever?
First of all, the IRS is on the one hand practical and on the other hand extremely arbitrary. That comes from being a huge bureaucracy. In being a huge bureaucracy, they tend to run, on an impersonal, computerized kind of basis, and that has all kinds of implications that Andy could talk about in terms of how they deal with us. But, and so in that way, they're kind of exact and follow certain guidelines and rules and forms. And on the other hand, they're so huge that they're very disorganized. So, and sometimes, in general, the more a person owes, the more likely they are to be pressured for collection. But every once in a while, the IRS will get very irrational about it and just go after someone for $5.32. There was someone in but in California, when I was down there last year, who owed a very small amount, and the IRS just kept going and going, and they took their car, and they just, in an effort, it seemed just to hassle them. So you can never quite tell what's going to happen, in the same way that some people who owe large amounts and have large incomes are never bothered. But generally, they're more likely to be collected on if they owe a lot and if they have the assets. The most likely way that the IRS collects is if you won't give it to them, is through taking it out of your bank account. And they can just go and they give you a 10-day notice, and then they go and they take it out of your bank account, and that's it. That's very simple for them. After that, they can garnish wages, which is about the next simplest thing for them. They try not to resort to property seizure because, on the one hand, it's a hassle for them to go to somebody's house and try to confiscate a television and then try to sell it. And on the other hand, it's really bad PR, and the IRS is very PR-minded. Does that sort of get at your question?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't have any examples as far as people that actually have said that they're war tax evaders, but just recently, the past 2 years, which is even more recent than your film strip, which I think only went as early as 1982.
No, this was just came out.
It
well, actually, I've been up here a while.
The statistics all came from 82, I believe. The only day I ever heard on anyone saying in 1982.
Okay.
But as January 1985, starting in about 1978 or so, a number of the men I worked with at a plant in Houston, Texas, began to stop paying income tax. It caught up with a lot of them last year. Four of them are serving prison terms, three of them for, 6 months. One of them has a 10-year prison term. He owes taxes of over $50,000. Others did have their wages garnished, and I know of one man for over a year. Now, where are they going to draw the line as to say that, okay, these people weren't going to pay taxes because of, or you're not paying taxes because of war tax, and you're not paying any income tax at all. What's going to stop the IRS from drawing a line and saying you're a tax evader on the rest of it, you know?
Mm-hmm. One of the keys to that is being open with them and avoiding fraud, avoiding sending the IRS purposely intentionally incorrect information, financial information, which I do not do. I fill out a 1040 form and I tell them exactly how much I made. I tell them just how many dependents I have, and I fill out the form, and at the bottom line it says I owe X amount, and I put that down and I send in the form, and I just don't enclose a check, which is probably not what the people you knew did with their $50,000. Non-filing is a much more serious way to the IRS.
He claimed exempt for like 7 years or so.
Uh-huh.
Do you know how widespread this movement is now, if people are involved?
No, it's really hard to gauge. Partly because it's a very individual thing. You don't have to be a member of a group to do it. And also, there's a tendency to want to lay a little bit low with it, because the more publicity you attract to yourself, the more likely you are to be collected, possibly. It's very hard to say.
How many people here do it?
Yeah, how many people here have done some form of war tax resistance? Raise your hand. Okay. More than you'd think.
Plus, the IRS isn't interested in telling that tale either.
No.
Mm-hmm. Or fear of encouraging further.
Right.
I was wondering, do you see a better difference as far as where you redirect your money to? As far as going to, like, say, the Louis Vuitton Scholarships Fund, or the various escrow accounts, or going to a local organization?
That's a real personal thing, what you do with your money. I've done a number of different things with it. I've sent my money sometimes directly to a local food bank or to a national political organization working for change that I approve of. Lately, I've been sending it to the Lutheran Peace Fellowship Tax Resistance Fund. The Lutheran Peace Fellowship is a national organization of Lutherans, committed to peace, and they've established a fund. And what I do is I send my money to this fund. They keep 10% of the say I owed $100 in taxes this year. I'll send them the $100 instead of sending it to the IRS. They'll keep $10 of that for operation expenses of their fund. And then what is the rest of it, I think, or there's some split. The rest of it goes into a special fund that they have. And that fund builds up money, and they give out loans from that money and grants from the interest of that money to various requests for grants and loans of things that are approved by the organization, things that work for affirming life, pursuing peace, and good things like that. And then if I am ever collected upon by the IRS, I can write to Lutheran Peace Fellowship and say I was just collected on, and they'll send me back the money that I've put in without interest. So it kind of covers me there a little bit. I think we had a question over here before we come back. Yeah.
Well, I was going to mention the Lutheran Peace Fellowship and mm-hmm. look that up, but it, you know, this is another, I see it as another form of conscientious objection. You know, I don't know, I didn't mm-hmm. write at the beginning of the slide, so I don't know whether they made it, you know, any mention to
no,
that
I didn't.
Or not, but that's really what it's all about. And I wanted to bring up the Lutheran Peace Fellowship was involved in it, too. And that's how they began. Mm-hmm.
I think that's a real important connection to make, that most of us are not in this room are not eligible to be drafted to go fight in a war. I personally know that if I were drafted, I would not do it. I would not go in. So then it would seem inconsistent for me to pay for somebody else to do that for me. I think that the parallel is very close there. Well, okay, that was introduced, what, about 10 years ago? 14 years ago. Each year it's gained one or two more sponsors here and there, and I believe 1985 was the first year it came to a committee in the House. It's moving very slowly, but it's not moving backwards, it's moving forwards. And again, that's a bill that would establish a conscientious objector status for taxpayers so that there would be a box on your 1040 form you could check, but it's just been reworded, and I'm not sure what all the rewording is.
Do you have a number if anybody wanted to write?
Yeah, I have it. I have it in my stuff here. Okay. And you would essentially say, I'm a conscientious objector to war, therefore send my taxes to a separate fund that would be used for other than military purposes. One more, and then we better go to Vespers.
What would your reaction?
I'm real supportive of conscientious objection of supporting of people following their conscience. There are some major things that are different about war tax resistance, one of which is that two-thirds of our taxes go to the military, and two-thirds of our taxes certainly do not go to HUD. And that's we better go to Vespers, I think.
$7.50
and the bell rang?
Yeah.
Okay.
I wanted to ask you one thing. As a Christian, my Bible says that Jesus paid taxes. Now, I don't know if you question whether or not what that tax is going to, and I do understand that one passage of Scripture was for the temple tax.
Mm-hmm.
But if he did say, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's, how do you look at that and to know that Jesus paid taxes, not questioning?
I think that's it's a real important passage, and I would really challenge the thought that Jesus was not questioning that payment of taxes when he said, render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar and to God the things that are God's. I think what that calls us to do is to question what things are Caesar's and what things are God's. They asked him, should we pay this tax? And if he had thought, well, pay taxes without questioning, he would have said, yes, always pay your taxes without questioning, for that's what God wants you to do. I mean, he certainly wasn't afraid of what would happen to him. But he said, choose. Figure out which things are Caesar's, which things are God's, and split those two things.
Yes, but there was yet another passage where they came up to Peter and asked, he says, does the master pay taxes? And Peter automatically opened up and said, yes, he pays the tribute. And Peter goes up to Jesus and says, they asked me if, you know, they asked me about the taxes, and Jesus says, well, you know, go down to the creek there and throw your hook in, the first fish you pull out, take him out, and then there's going to be coin in his mouth, take him, go pay your tribute for me and you. Mm-hmm.
I think that was the temple tax that you were referring to before.
That was the temple tax.
Yeah, which is a lot different from funding nuclear war, I think.
Or paying taxes.
Yeah.
I'm not, but I don't know. I feel I'm different than many people in this room, though. I'm not worried myself about a nuclear war at all, because the Lord lives, and you know, he's not going to let it happen unless...
Oh, God let Hitler happen, too. And I would rather not have paid taxes to support Hitler.
I've read entire books on that discussion right there. So you have a good point. I've read entire books that dealt with that passage.
So. Jesus was a nonviolent person.
I agree. We should be.
You know, and that's what we're, you know, that's our goal to follow, that, you know, we have to choose the way we want to live. And
if I come to turn, you know, I would be glad never to pay another dime to see somebody get guns, you know? If that was the case. I'd love to do that if I could come up to terms as to where to draw the line, you know? I don't know exactly where to stop paying taxes.
Yeah, that's a big question is where do you draw the line? That's why the question about wealth, do we pay for wealth? If someone objects to welfare, is that okay? It's real important to decide where we draw the line. I think we do need to go. Pardon me?
The work for our total nation, I mean, did contribute to taking Hitler, and if it weren't for our entry into...
That's a highly debated question also.
I'd
like to plug two books that might help in this debate. One is available in the bookstore, People Pay for Peace, put out by the Center on Law and Pacifism. It comes from a Christian perspective, and it talks about methods you can use, likely consequences, as well as, I think its strong point is a number of letters that various people have written to the IRS that helps you sort of see where other people were in their journey, and that helps some of us figure out where we are. The other one is Guide to War Tax Resistance from the War Resisters League, which is not in the bookstore, but which is available from the War Resisters League and from various places around the country. It comes from a more secular point of view, and I actually prefer this book because I think it's clearer, generally has more up-to-date information.
Thank you.
Thank you.